Welcome to the CDH Conversations podcast. My name is Leon Huysen, an associate at CDH based in Cape Town. Today, we will be speaking about whether there's an obligation to verify the status of people with disabilities for purposes of complying with the Employment Equity Act No. 55 of 1998, and whether there's an interplay between this act and a broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Act No. 53 of 2023. Joining me today is Yvonne Makefa, director in our employment law department. Yvonne, thank you for making time to discuss this interesting topic. To address this question, I think it would be important for us to look at, firstly, the Employment Equity Act, secondly, the Employment Equity Regulations of 2019, thirdly, the Code of Good Practice on the Employment of People with Disabilities of 2016, and lastly, the Broad-Based Black Economic Empower Act of 2023.
Thank you, Han, and I'm glad that we have made the time just to deal with this topic. I think it's actually quite critical, given that we are seeing quite a number of proposed amendments to the various pieces of legislation within the employment law legislation. You're correct. There are considerations for us to look at, especially when it comes to people with disabilities. More so that the Employment Equity Commission has also taken keen interest in how these categories of employees are protected. I think as a starting point, let's deal with the Employment Equity Act. Section 6, subsection 1 of this Act sets out that no employee may be unfairly discriminated against on the basis of his or her disability. This section, therefore, provides a foundational right, establishing that disability is a protected ground in the workplace and the labor market.
Thank you for that, Yvonne. Yeah, I do think it's also important for us to look at the definition of designated persons, specifically when we consider and as it relates to people with disabilities. So if we revert to the Code of Good Practice on Employment of Persons with Disabilities, we shall see, Yvonne, that definition of people with disabilities involving work and employment can be found there, specifically and as well as dealing with the disclosure of that disability. Now, let's look at the definition as provided in the code. Disability is defined as, firstly, a long-term or recurring physical or mental impairment, which substantially limits the prospects of entry or advancement in employment. Now, if we look and we consider the definition further, it refers to a physical impairment. And a physical impairment means a partial or total loss of a person's bodily function or part of the body. And a mental impairment means a clinical recognized condition or illness that affects a person's body, specifically a person's thought process, such as judgments or emotions. Thirdly, if we consider the long term, Yvonne, it's defined as the impairment has lasted or is likely to last longer than 12 months. Recurring impairment is defined as one that is likely to happen again and to be substantially limiting. The code considers progressive conditions as those that are likely to develop or change or recur. Now, the code refers to substantial limitation as meaning the impairment that significantly restricts the person's ability to perform essential functions or access employment opportunities compared to a person that does not have this impairment.
That's important to outline, particularly in relation to the question that we are dealing with today, which is whether a designated employer has the duty to verify the disability status of an employee living with a disability. As you can see, the definition is quite wide and broad, and in certain instances, not readily ascertainable when you're actually looking at a person. Let's look at Employment Equity Act, Section 13, which sets out the duties of a designated employer. Subsection 1 of the Act states that every designated employer must implement affirmative action measures for people who are from a designated group to achieve employment equity. So there is a positive obligation for the designated employer to do this. Subsection 2 sets out that a designated employer must consult with the employees conduct an analysis, prepare an employment equity plan, and report to the Director General on the progress that has been made, particularly in relation to what they've planned and outlined in the employment equity plan. Another very important duty of a designated employer is set out in Section 19 of the Act, and it requires an analysis of employment policies, practices, and workplace profiles to determine any barriers that might affect designated employees, including identifying the representation of people with disability in the workplace. This process is undertaken by collecting information from employees. And that is critical as a process to be followed and, as I said, linked to what we are addressing today.
Thanks so for that, Yvonne. I think that adequately covers the part of the Employment Equity Act relating to this question. As previously said, we were also going to refer to other sources, and we are now going to start with the regulations. The regulations address the duties of a designated employer in that it specifically requires the employer to request each employee or from their employees in the workforce to complete a declaration form, which we normally refer to in the industry as a EEA-1 form. And the regulations further state that where an employee refuses to complete such a form, the EEA-1 form, or provides inaccurate information on such a form, the employer is entitled to establish the correct designation of that employee. And now one could think, how can this be achieved? Well, this can be achieved by using reliable historical and existing data to verify the status. However, and this is quite important, employees have the right not to declare their disability unless it's in line with an inherent job requirement. Maybe someone may not have heard of the Employment Equity Act 1 form that I previously referred to, or they do not know it is as an employment equity or what an employment equity form 1 is. Can you maybe elaborate for us on that, Yvonne?
Lihan, it's actually in the name, right? It's EEA-1 form, which somewhat gives it away, as EEA stands for Employment Equity Act. This is a form used to provide employees demographic information to their employers for purposes of employment equity, particularly for reporting and the workplace analysis as they plan ahead for their employment equity goals and targets. This form is completed by employees. Interestingly, item 8, sub item 3 of the regulation states that where an employee refuses to complete the EEA-1 form or provides inaccurate information, the employer may establish the designation of such an employee by using reliable historical and existing data. Reference to the word refuse suggests that providing this information is voluntary from the employee's point of view. But in terms of the regulations, the employer has some recourse to establish the employee's designation through reliable historical and existing data. The next question that we should ask is, can the employer unilaterally complete the employee's disability based on this reliable historical and existing data, specifically in circumstances where the employee has not declared their disability? I can think of an employee as an example who was involved in a motor vehicle accident and returned to the office with a prosthetic leg. Can the employer ask the employee to declare their disability? The answer is yes. Can the employee refuse? The answer is yes. But can the employer unilaterally complete the form and declare the disability? The answer to that question is no. The employer cannot, as the employee retains the right not to disclose or declare their disability unless it is in line with the inherent job requirement.
That is rather interesting, I must say. But thank you very much for that clarity. I think the next question then for us, Yvonne, would be the case where the employee has declared their disability and the employer, on reasonable grounds, does not believe that that employee has a disability or that employee that claims a disability requires accommodation. What is the next step then, Yvonne?
In such a case, Lan, the employer is entitled to request the employee to be assessed or tested to determine the employee's disability or otherwise. And this will be done at the employer's cost. So the employee at this point in time would have already declared that they have a disability, and the employer, it just requires for that to be confirmed medically, and they will cover the costs.
Yvonne, let us explore the BBB Act, where in terms of the Act, the employer can unilaterally verify the status of an employee.
Thank you for that, Lehan. I think a crucial part of this question is whether there is an interplay between the Employment Equity Act and the BBBEE Act. It is important to note that the objective of the BBBEE Act is to facilitate broad-based Black economic empowerment. And one of the pillars in the BBBEE Act is management control, which requires designated employers to employ people from designated group at all levels of management, including the board, by the way. Designated groups are defined based on race, gender, and people with disabilities. The objective is to increase the extent to which workers own and manage existing and new enterprises. Where we find the interplay between the Employment Equity Act and the BBBEE Act, as we mentioned earlier, is that firstly, even though the BBBEE Act uses the term people with disabilities, it does not define that term expressly. We therefore have to revert to the Code of Good Practice on Employment of Persons with Disabilities to give the term appropriate meaning and apply such a definition in the context of the BBBEE Act. Secondly, the BBBEE Act does not have a separate declaration form to be completed, such as the EEA1 form, as you would find in the employment equity context. As such, the verification agencies that assess organizations' BBBEE status can use the information in the EEA1 form to determine such. This takes us back to what we mentioned earlier, that the employer can rely on independent historical and reliable data in the context of Employment Equity Act. Therefore, can the verification agencies also use independent historical and reliable data when they conduct their verification or when they sample employees for purposes of this process of verification, and such sample includes an employee with a disability? We normally would see that when they conduct this verification, they will also request for the EEA1 form to ensure that both the demographic is confirmed and also the person's disability status. In the event that they do find or they can observe that an employee has a disability, the question is, can the agency unilaterally change or declare on the employee's behalf their disability? The answer is no. Because, as you stated, that the regulation state that the people with the disability or employee with a disability retains the right not to disclose their disability status.
Yvonne, I can then confidently from that say that it seems and it's clear to me that there's an interplay between the Employment Equity Act on the one side and then the BBBEE on the other side. Firstly, I would say it's in relation to defining people with disabilities, as the BBBEE Act relies on the Employment Equity Act for the definition. And I would say, secondly, the information that is required from a BBBEE verification is then, as we've discussed, contained on the Employment Equity 1 form as contained in the Employment Equity Act.
That is correct, Lehan. Employers must be very diligent with these declaration forms, and where there is a need to conduct medical assessment, they should do so timely and lawfully.
Thanks for that, Yvonne. I think we have concisely covered and addressed this question, and I must say it was really enjoyable to be with you on this podcast, and thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.